WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome into the student section's college football wrap-up here on 90.7 The Capstone. First time in a little bit for us. Today is January 22nd. We're live here from the University of Alabama. I'm Nicholas Pursley, joined tonight, as always, by Joe Schatz. How are we doing?
Pretty good. Happy to be back from break. Happy to be talking some college football, even though it's, you know, off-season. Still a lot to talk about, I'm sure, so I'm just happy to be here.
And, as always, Adam Hambright.
Yeah, pretty much feeling the same. I mean, look, the season's over, but we know college football around here. It's 24/7, 365. You got coaching moves, you got recruiting. You know, it's still a lot of exciting things happening over here.
Yeah, we got a ton to talk about. I mean, we didn't have a show for the entirety of the playoff season.
When was the last show? It was before the SEC championship.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. So a lot has happened in college football. But first, we're going to take a look back. You know, we're going to look back at the college football playoff, and we're going to kind of talk about, you know, what it meant, how we feel about the team. So the first thing I'll ask is probably the biggest question: did the committee get it right? Were the four correct teams in the playoffs?
Yeah, I'll start off. I think so. I mean, listen, I think, and you know, I think Alabama is a better team than TCU. I mean, Alabama was right outside that top four, but to, you know, it's, you can't justify Alabama getting in with two losses, you know, kind of in their two biggest games. All their other wins kind of fell apart. So I you know, and I don't think beyond Alabama, there's an argument for, you know, the Tennessees, the Clemsons, the USCs, whatever you have. So I think, you know, they got the four teams right. I mean, listen, if you're going to complain about TCU getting blown out by Georgia, then you have to look at the fact that TCU also beat Michigan, which, you know, is a very good football team that was undefeated. So, you know, I think I do think they got the four teams right just based off of who deserved it. It was those four.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Even with Tennessee, you know, if they don't lose that second game against South Carolina, or even Clemson, if they don't lose the second game with South Carolina, they could have potentially got in as a one-loss champion. But I don't really think they would have replaced TCU anyway. I think it would have been replacing Ohio State, and then we would, whoever got in would have been playing Georgia. And I think, you know, Georgia looked like the best team pretty much all year. If you just look at the bowl game for Alabama, you might be able to say Alabama could have hung with them in the game. But we don't know that. We didn't get to play in the regular season, didn't get to play in the SEC championship because we lost two games. We didn't get to play in the playoff. I know that championship, you know, looks bad when it's, you know, a 50, you know, point win, more than 50-point win. But, like, we all knew that Georgia and Michigan were going to get in the playoff. And I think we all thought that they would be in the national championship, and then, you know, Michigan turns the ball over at the one-yard line and all the penalties. I mean, it's, if Michigan takes care of business, we might have had a decent national championship, or Georgia could have beat them by 40. You never know, because
yeah, Georgia was that good.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Look, let's be honest here. The only team that – there was really a debate about, you know, maybe should not have been in the playoff was Ohio State. TCU gets in regardless of the Big 12 championship game loss. It was last second. You know, I think that Sonny Dykes kind of hurt Max Duggan's Heisman chances when, you know, he doesn't give him the chance at the end of regulation to, you know, pull a Patrick Mahomes and go the length of the field and get a field goal. Regardless, the only team that there was really a debate about was Ohio State.
Yep.
And they gave us a fantastic semifinal game against Georgia.
Yep.
I think the one thing that you can't argue against is how good the semifinals were.
Yes.
And granted, it took Michigan playing a terrible football game, making some critical mistakes.
And
it took Georgia, you know, after that game, I'm blanking on Georgia coach.
Kirby Smart.
Yes, Kirby. Kirby was so angry after that game. You know, it didn't seem like he was happy at all because he was very frustrated by how they played in that game. He thought that they, you know, obviously should have blown out Ohio State because Ohio State had just gotten blown out at home against Michigan.
Yeah, they lost by 23. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of the argument that I would kind of saw more – like, I mean, a bunch of people were saying, you know, TCU shouldn't have been in, but, you know, Ohio State loses by 23 at home. If Alabama were to get in, that's the only argument, even though it was two losses, it was, you know, it was close games and not 23 in Bryant-Denny, you know. But I still think the four most deserving teams got in. And I did see – I can't remember who exactly said this, but after that national championship game, they were talking about the 12-team playoff when we go to that format, that you'll have the teams like TCU. If they're going to get blown out in a national championship, they're probably going to lose earlier in the playoff, so then you don't have that 63-7 national championship. We don't know until we actually see the 12-team playoff, but that is something to think about. Maybe teams that – might be deserving but not the best kind of lose in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, granted, going into the playoff we thought Michigan was the second best team in the country. Yep. Easily. I mean, they manhandled Ohio State, and to lose to TCU like that, you know, you would have never thought that the national championship would have went the way that it did. Maybe Georgia was just that much better than everybody else. That's also a possibility. You know, you started talking about the 12-team playoff. I think one of the biggest complaints about the 12-team playoff is that, you know, in the past, the semifinal games have been horrible. Like, big blowouts. It only really seemed like two teams really could even compete for the national championship. But this year, I mean, it's hard to look at those semifinal games and say that they weren't, like, they were fantastic. Both of those games were really good. I mean, after the first game finished, I was like, oh, we still got a whole nother football game to go. This is incredible. It was great television.
Yeah. I think it was wild. Yeah, just the entertainment aspect of it, of the ESPN. I don't know if you guys were watching this view, but there was the ESPN multicast of the ball drop with the guy kicking the field goal for Ohio State. And, like, if you just wanted a pure entertainment, like, ratings boost, like, you got the ball dropping to ring in the new year, and this dude's lining up to kick a field goal to potentially win the game, and he misses it, and everybody in New York, like, screams Happy New Year. Kind of rough timing for the kicker, but
it's great for all the Georgia fans.
Yeah, Georgia was probably, like, heck, you know, yeah, undefeated in 2023. Yeah. But yeah, I think just from an entertainment, and it was kind of almost, I would say it was almost needed, because I think a lot of people were getting pretty sick of watching some of these playoff games where, I mean, it was just, I mean, you know, if you look at last year, it was Alabama beating up on Cincinnati and Georgia did, like, embarrassing Michigan. And this year you got, you know, you had a game-winning field goal go wide in the Ohio State-Georgia game, and Michigan-TCU came down to, you know, kind of the final drive. So I think it was a great playoffs, and I think it kind of showed that we did get a lot of, you know, four teams here correct, because they were so evenly matched, and there was no question going into the national championship about whether these teams should be there. Yeah. You know, even the team, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, who lost, showed that they were, you know, some of the best teams in the country. So,
and it might have just been, you know, this year with pretty much the whole season, nobody really knowing who was the best team. I mean, we kind of, you know, Georgia, you know, undefeated, everybody, you know, kind of assumes, but, you know, they had, you know, a couple of games against Kent State and Missouri where they almost lost. At the end, you know, they look like the Georgia we kind of expected all year. But if we had that 12-team playoff this year, like, with the question marks still past Georgia, obviously, like, you know, Michigan lost to TCU. You know, TCU gets blown out by Georgia. Ohio State had gotten blown out by Michigan. If we have the 12-team playoff, you saw how the semifinal games were. Would it have been, you know, more blowouts with the 12 teams, or would those other games been just as competitive as the semifinals with how close all the teams kind of were to each other this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Georgia was probably a step better than everybody else, save for Alabama playing their absolute best.
Yeah,
I think,
like, if you have the Alabama from the Kansas State game, they probably hang with Georgia.
But right. Yeah, you know, maybe not the Alabama that we saw the rest of the year, but
yeah, that one.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that this year particularly, I think this would have been a great year for a 12-team playoff. I think a lot of the games would have been really close, and I think that you probably don't end up with what happened in the national championship game. You probably don't have somebody getting blown out. But, you know, speaking of a blowout, you know, TCU obviously doesn't have the result that they're looking for in the national championship game. But let's kind of talk about, you know, what does making a national championship do for this TCU football program that some, you could argue is the top program in the Big 12 now, regardless of the fact that they lost to Kansas State?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes by well, especially when you look at the program, where it is and where it's going to be, especially down the line when they do expand to 12 teams and you do get maybe a better shot to get in, where you get an automatic shot if you're the Big 12 champ, to get in. And I mean, if you look at it, like TCU had like a couple good years, but this year they were crazy. And then if you pair that with, okay, they got a good head coach in Sonny Dykes, they have a good recruiting base, you know, just being in Texas in general. I mean, you can, like, an average Texas high school player kind of beats up on a lot of other states' best players. So, I mean, it's – they – I think for them to get to that stage, even though they did get embarrassed, you know, it shows that it can be done, and it shows that, you know, even if, you know, maybe you – like, if you take that TCU team and continue to develop and get recruits in the door that can make those plays that Georgia was able to make, that – you know, Ohio State, Alabama's been able to make, then, you know, you could potentially see a team like TCU get to that final destination and win it, you know, every so often. So I think for them it was obviously, you know, the place was crazy, but you know, just for them from a program perspective, it I don't think it can be understated just how big of a deal getting to that game was for players, current players, and recruits and coaches and people that probably didn't think a team like TCU could ever get in. I mean, we were, you know, we probably had a couple of times on this, on our show here during the regular season about looking at TCU's schedule and saying, okay, this is where they might lose, this is where they might lose, just kind of imagining them losing, and they never did until that final game. So I think for them it was a huge step in that right direction.
Yeah, so in one of our first shows, it might have even been our first show, we had talked about what the 12-team playoff could do, and we were talking about how it could bring exposure to these other programs that don't really get seen as much, mostly talking about, you know, the Group of Five. I know TCU used to be in the Group of Five, now they're in the Big 12, but you can see it now with them, you know, getting to the playoff for the first time, national championship for the first time. They were able to sign their first top 20 recruiting class in program history. So you have that. And then all of a sudden you have the transfers coming in. You know, once they're actually in the playoff and they win that semifinal game, transfer portal's open. You know, they got people that weren't, you know, playing too much at Alabama, but, you know, you had Trey Sanders who had, you know, he hadn't been playing because of his injury a few years ago where he almost had to have his leg amputated. But, you know, he transfers over. Backup offensive lineman, Brockermeyer, he transfers over. Then JoJo Earl, who had actually played, you know, sparingly because he was injured, you know, most of the season, you know, he transfers over. So now you have your first top 20 recruiting class. Now you have people transferring to your school who would usually probably transfer somewhere else. And then you were kind of talking about the recruiting base in Texas. So they didn't have a single five-star, but they're still a top 20 class. But if you look at the people that committed to them, Garland, Texas, Mesquite, Texas, Amarillo, Texas, Freeport, Texas, it's all Texas guys. So now instead of those guys going out of the state or even staying in state but going to Texas, now they're going to TCU.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I think we have Sonny Dykes did a fantastic job.
Yep, first year.
First year head coach, 12-0 in the regular season, you take your team to the national championship game.
Yeah.
He got a bag from TCU before the playoffs even started. They extended him, and it was the right decision. I mean, look, Gary Patterson had done some really great things with TCU in the past. You know, obviously that 2014 season where they go 12-1. But look, they had a fantastic year, and I think that getting, you know, despite the fact that you got blown out and that, you know, people are starting to make a meme out of it, you know, they're saying, you know, you got TCU'd if you get blew out now. I mean, TCU is the kings of the Big 12, in my opinion, right now. You know, look, they lost the Big 12 championship game to Kansas State, but, I mean, they made it to the national championship game. They beat a blue blood in Michigan. Yeah.
I also think when you look at, you know, in the future with a program like TCU and a lot of those Big 12 programs, like, you're not going to have Texas and Oklahoma who, you know, even if they have bad seasons or super talented teams, and you might not have those teams potentially, you know, trying to beat, you know, beating you all the time. I mean, you're going to have a schedule in which, you know, you're going to have the Big 12 with, instead of Texas, Oklahoma, and, you know, kind of the rest of the gauntlet, they're being replaced with, you know, UCF, Cincinnati, schools that TCU could, you know, very easily beat, especially this year's TCU team. So, I mean, I think for them, it if they continue this rise, it's almost at the perfect time, because they might be able to kind of run away with conference championships,
especially with the 12-team playoff coming up.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, the Power Five conferences. You win the conference, you're getting in the playoff, and Texas and Oklahoma might be hating themselves a little bit for making the move to the SEC in a conference that they might not win with how deep the SEC is going to be.
Well, they're getting a lot of money though.
I mean, cash is king, but at the same time, it's like,
success.
What really matters to you? Like, if you're Texas, if you're Oklahoma,
yeah.
Do you care about winning national championships, or do you care about making
money? I mean, the players and the coaching staff does not care about TV deals.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Texas itself does not need any more money with the boosters they got. So.
I mean, like, in my mind, by moving to the SEC, you just gave up a free spot in the playoff every single season.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
if,
granted,
if your program plays to the expectations.
Like this year, they did not, but, you know.
I mean, Oklahoma was an absolute shell of itself this year, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, Texas, you know, they may never be back. But, you know, they got Arch Manning coming, so maybe they'll be good.
Oh, but he's, you know, you got to worry about his security. He's lost his ID twice, and he's only been on campus a couple weeks.
Yeah, and then he was making a LinkedIn post.
If he came to Alabama, our at cards are on our phone, so.
Exactly. There is no physical ID.
Yeah.
Archibald Manning.
Breaking news, Texas is poor.
You know, let's talk a little bit more about how we feel about the other teams that were also in the playoffs. So there's this big discussion, you know, he said it right while Nick Saban was sitting right next to him. He said that Georgia was the new top dog in college football.
Yes.
How do we feel about that? Are we ready to take that leap yet? Is it too early?
I mean, oh boy. I think, I mean, so here's the thing, is that I'm a firm believer that until you lose your crown, you are the best team. So, like, Georgia next season should be ranked number one going into the season because they're the national champions. Like, that, I don't know, mentally, like, that just makes sense to me. But if you're going to count, like, 2 years of a national championship, and it was back-to-back, which is incredibly difficult, but if you're going to count 2 years versus two decades, pretty much, of Alabama at this point,
yeah,
I mean,
it's 2008.
2008, yeah. So, I mean, you're talking... Sorry, yeah, not two decades. 15 years, I guess.
It's getting close.
Yeah, it's almost there. But, I mean, I just don't think you can compare, especially when you look at, I mean, listen, in years in which Alabama hasn't won a national championship, they've pretty much won something at the end of the year. You know, I want to say, you know, Georgia, yeah, they've had a really good 2 years, but, I mean, so did, you know, Clemson.
Yeah. So this was the first year since, I believe, 2005 that the – the team that won the championship or even just played in it didn't have to either play against Alabama or was Alabama, because 2006, you know, Florida had to play Alabama. 2007, LSU played Alabama. 2008, Florida beat Alabama in the championship game. And ever since then, it's either been Alabama in the championship or that team had to beat Alabama to win the championship, or at least to get to it. So it's 2 years. It's back-to-back. And then, you know, before that you know, they were in, you know, the SEC championship game a couple of years. So it's like their program's been right there. 2 years back-to-back is kind of tough to say you're not the king of college football. But, I mean, people are already saying, you know, they've been saying it for years. But, they say the Alabama dynasty's over. But some people are going the next step and saying, you know, this is the Georgia dynasty. Well, it's like, okay. for that, let's hold on a little bit. Let's see it. How do you do next year? Do you still make the SEC championship? Do you go for a three-peat? Because a three-peat, I don't think, has been done since, you know, way before I was born.
Yeah.
I mean, the closest would have been, you know, we'll see. You had Alabama. Yeah. They won it in 11, 12, and then they didn't win another one until 15.
Yeah.
In the 90s, you had Nebraska win 3 out of 4. So that would be, you know, if they could just win 3 out of 4, then you could really be. I don't think a dynasty is really until it's like 3 out of 4, 3 out of 5.
I think in college football, you got to go through, from your first national championship, you got to go through a whole recruiting cycle. So 4 years. And then I think you can really start to say, okay, listen, like you mentioned, 3 out of 4 times, you know, they've been the national champion. Then you can start talking about, okay, it's a full dynasty. Because then you're getting new, like you're pretty much wiping the slate clean from your first team.
But I will say, if I am Nick Saban, oh yeah, Georgia's the king of college football.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that to every single one of my players all off season long.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was like Kirby Smart, you know, they were talking about how, I think he said something like, oh, everybody was doubting them. Who was doubting Georgia in the national championship? I mean, did he brainwash his players into thinking they were going to lose by 20?
The one player was like, yeah, they picked us to go 7-5. And I was like, I don't think they did, but yeah.
Nobody picked you to go 7-5. A couple people picked you to lose the championship game. Like, I think Stephen A. Smith, I think he picked ECU. But, you know, nobody really doubted Georgia unless he is showing the team our radio show after that Missouri game, because then, you know, he might be able to convince that everybody's doubting them. But, you know, nobody was really doubting Georgia. And, like, if he was able, like, I mean, obviously he was able to convince his team that, you know, he's doing something right over there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, look, recency bias is so real today, especially in the media. You know, you have – now, granted, they won back-to-back national championships, like something that only, what, two other teams have ever done before.
Also, you know, we did it in 2011 and 12, and then you had, I guess, USC technically counts for 2003 and 2004.
Yeah, then
Nebraska.
Depends who you ask.
Nebraska in the 90s, and before that, it was probably like Oklahoma in like the 60s or something.
Yeah, you know. It was Army in the 20s.
And yeah, that's a huge accomplishment, but you know, they could just as easily come out next year. And if they were to do it again, if they were to do a three-peat, like, I'll crown you. Like, that would be unbelievable. I mean,
that's hard.
Hopefully, they actually have to beat Alabama next year.
Yeah,
hopefully Alabama's there.
Anyway, we're going to wrap things up. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the coordinator situation at Alabama. Who's gone? Who should be gone? We'll be right back here on 90.7.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back to the College Football Wrap-Up Show here on 90.7 The Capstone. We just got done talking about the college football playoffs, all the teams. But now we're going to move to Alabama. And, you know, we're going to talk about their coordinator situation. Obviously, the biggest news around here, Pete Golding headed to Ole Miss. He's gone in what you can rightfully say is a pretty lateral move.
I guess.
Would imagine
lateral in the actual sense of that ball had to go behind the guy pitching it.
Yeah.
So how do we feel about Pete Golding going to Ole Miss? Was this the right move by Nick Saban to let Pete Golding go? Because let's be honest, it was one of those situations where it's like, you move on. I don't want to have to get rid of you. It's like, okay, go take this job so you don't have to
It was like a soft firing, you know, where it's not on his resume, you know. And, you know, he goes to Ole Miss where Lane Kiffin's the coach. And, you know, they were, you know, there for a couple of years, you know, while Lane was still, you know, as offense coordinator. So, I mean, it's a good move for Pete Golding to make. It's a good move for Nick Saban to make because now he can hire a new coach. And if – I mean, Pete Golding's either going to show you that he was better than what, you know, our defense was playing and shut us down, or Nick Saban's got a game where he knows that defensive coordinator and is going to be able to run up the score on him. So I think it was a good move all around.
Yeah, I think – I mean, I think it was a good move just simply because if you – you know, broke it down and looked at, especially like this season, where you had guys like Will Anderson, Dallas Turner, you know, Cooley McKinstry was coming back as your number one. You had, you know, Brian Branch. You know, you had really talented players, and it was supposed to be one of the best defenses that Alabama's had, and it surely might be one of the more talented ones they've had, just based off of, like, you know, the combination of five stars and stats even the year prior. But I, you know, you just didn't see that much improvement. In fact, I, you know, especially in that Tennessee game, and you know, there have been a couple other times where you saw maybe almost a regression, and you know, at times. Now the Kansas State game, they played really good.
Yeah, you had those glimpses. You had Kansas State.
You had
almost shutting out Mississippi State.
Yeah,
the second half against Ole Miss, shutting them down. You know, that was good, but that Tennessee
overall
game, that's
yeah, the Tennessee game was bad. And you know, if you pair it with kind of his you know, last year's team and kind of what that defense was, and I just didn't see anything really that, you know, it's any growth. And at Alabama especially, I mean, you can't hire coaches who you think are going to get better in 5 years. Like, Alabama's expectation is you got to be in the national championship every year. You got to win it every year. And if you're not seeing growth over a couple seasons, you know, I think it was kind of a shame Pete Golding had to go, because he seemed kind of nice and he was a very good recruiter. But just as a defensive coordinator, I was not fond of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough when, you know, you have one of the most skilled, like, defensive rosters in the whole game. You've got all the weapons, and your defense gets worse from last year to this season. And, I mean, literally, you want to have a list of reasons why Pete Golding got, you know, fired. It's the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
You score 49 points, and you cannot beat Tennessee.
Yeah.
Simple.
And, yeah. And if you look, especially when you looked at the other teams that Alabama was supposed to be competing against, like when Georgia played Tennessee didn't have a prayer. Like, that, Georgia looked like they were the better, more physical, more talented team. Alabama looked like they were just, you know, a middle SEC defense with a pretty good offense, you know, that was able to compensate for it. So, you know, I wasn't super against Pete Golding as maybe some other people, but you know, when you sit down and really look at the numbers, it was kind of apparent he either had to go or somebody else had to take it.
And yeah, and you look at it where, you know, Nick Saban has said over the last, you know, few years, I mean, if you go back to, you know, his early years here, we had like the best defense every year. And, you know, he said over the last couple of seasons, like, oh, you can't have that kind of defense anymore. And no, it's not exactly the same, but Georgia's showing you can still have a dominant defense. Mm-hmm. And yes, they gave up a lot of points to Ohio State. That was like the only game all year they actually gave up points. All the other ones, they were shutting everybody down. Like, even the games we're talking about, where like Kent State and Missouri, it wasn't like their defense was giving up a lot of points. Their offense couldn't score, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of refocused Nick Saban a little bit, hopefully, to where he's like, oh, I need to get a defense like Georgia's got right now. Like, we can still play defense in this day of college football.
Yeah, that would be welcome. Other news, Bill O'Brien interviewing with the Patriots. He's apparently their leading candidate to go become their offensive coordinator. Kind of twofold here. Is there any chance that he comes back? And do we want him back?
I don't want him back.
No.
I think there's a chance he could be back. And, like, I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, if the Patriots offer him the job, I think he's taking the Patriots job. But, like, if they don't offer him, is he going anywhere else to be an offensive coordinator? Like, he's been with the Patriots before as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Is he going to any other NFL team as an offensive coordinator? Or is he basically going to say, everybody else besides this team, you have to give me a head coaching job? And now, some colleges might offer him a head coaching job, but is it going to be, you know, a high enough level that he's going to want? Because, you know, he'd be the head coach of Penn State. Yep. Is he going to take a head coaching job at a Group of Five school? I don't think so. So I think it's either he goes to the Patriots, the offense coordinator, and NFL offers him a head coaching job, or he's back at Alabama as offense coordinator, which I don't really want, but
yeah,
I'm not the one making decisions.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of on the same boat. I don't necessarily want him back, but – I have a feeling that it's going to turn into one of these situations where, you know, and obviously we don't know, you know, we're students chilling in a radio booth, but it might turn into one of these situations where, you know, Nick Saban's telling Bill O'Brien, hey, if this team calls, or if, you know, if somebody calls you asking for a job, you know, maybe take it, because, you know, you might, he's either taking a job or he might get fired at Alabama. I don't know, obviously, but I have a feeling Bill O'Brien wants to go back into the NFL any way he could. So I think being an offensive coordinator for the Patriots, not a bad gig at all. You know, you pretty much get to run a more, you know, the offense that he was trying to run at Alabama that was kind of getting bailed out by Bryce Young a lot, you know, he can actually run in the NFL, and it wouldn't, you know, you don't necessarily need a generational guy. You know, he has experience. I think everything is in line for him to go back to the NFL, and wouldn't be too opposed to that. So,
yeah, real quickly, just to interrupt, speaking of the NFL, it would appear that Brett Maher has made a field goal in the Cowboys game. It was a 25-yarder, but I cannot believe that testing they the actually there. Put him out on the field to kick a field goal.
Barely, like, Brett Maher.
You know, I saw a meme. Well, not really a meme. Somebody tweeted it out. It'll probably become a meme, but it was basically saying that next year the Cowboys need to tank for Will Reichard.
Yeah, tank for Will Reichard. I will not.
The old first round kicker.
Watching him miss four extra points in a row was truly one of the most sickos things I've ever seen happen.
I would imagine
with my own eyes.
Well, I mean, Nick, you're a Cowboys fan, but I mean, I couldn't, like, when that game got to, like, where Tampa Bay was clearly not going to win this game. I mean, at that point, like, I would have guessed you would have made one. Like, no pressure. Like, it's what was it, like 30-something to 7? Like, just like you can make one, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you just keep marching out there, because surely he can't miss them all, right?
Like, he did. That's what's crazy.
You're thinking, like, oh, come on. Mike McCarthy's like, there's no shot he misses his third extra point in a row. There's no way he misses four, right? Yeah. Like, no kicker had ever missed four extra points
clearly,
in a game,
clearly,
and then he missed four in a row.
Clearly, these people have not watched Alabama football for the last, you know, 20 years. Up until Will Reichard got there, that was like us. Like, you never know what you were going to make.
And it was some dude you never heard of kicking the ball, too. Yeah. Like, I remember that. God, that guy in the Georgia game, Papa, whatever his name was,
Papa Nasty. That's what everybody's been calling.
Yeah, I just, oh man.
But you know, Cowboys are always going to do Cowboy things. So, you know, back on Bill O'Brien, I guess. You know, I think he would be a good fit for the Patriots. You know, honestly, I don't know how the Patriots can sit here and watch what he's done at Alabama the last 2 years with the weapons that he had. I mean, granted, you know, they probably win that national championship game last year if, you know, injuries to the receivers don't happen late in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, last year he had an excuse. This year, I don't know.
I know this isn't exactly about Bill O'Brien right now, but what kind of voodoo magic is the Georgia defense doing? John Mechie in the SEC championship game goes down ACL. Jameson Williams, national championship game, like first quarter, down, ACL. Marvin Harrison Jr., lighting him up, I think it was third quarter, goes out after taking that shot to the head. It's like every time these receivers are lighting you up, it's some freak injury happens to them.
Yeah.
Do they know something we don't? Do they have the magic?
They got something.
The curse?
I mean, I guess the curse would be better. Let's not forget, I believe the semifinal game was in Atlanta, so.
They have Scott Cochran. That's who they have. And, you know, he spent too many years at Alabama with players that kept getting hurt, so he knew exactly how to hit these other players to get them hurt with the defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's Georgia's certainly getting pretty lucky. They're in back-to-back years. But, you know, apparently they're the new kings of college football. Yeah. So, do we have any preferences for who we want to see at Alabama? Any names that we're, you know, fired up about? There is a lot of talk about Jeremy Pruitt.
I like Jeremy Pruitt. I think he was a very good coordinator. Obviously, things didn't work out as a head coach. I think he would do good. I just don't think, like, with how everybody's like, I thought I was on his own. I'm like, oh, Jeremy Pruitt's going to come back. Then once everybody started saying it, now I'm like, okay, he's not coming back. It's going to be somebody that we've never heard before. Just like Pete Golding. You know, Pete Golding was at, you know, where was he at?
He was at
At Texas San Antonio?
Yeah, it was one of the
UTSA.
UTSA or UTEP, I forgot.
So, yeah, it's going to be somebody that we probably never heard before. But I have seen, you know, there's one of the coordinators at Georgia. You know, he's an Alabama alum, and he was on the coaching staff. I wouldn't mind him coming in.
I believe he just had one of his players, one of his personal players, transfer here. So.
Yeah, he was the linebackers coach, too, and, you know, he just transferred. He said, you know, that he wished him well, and I'm like, why don't you come, you know, keep coaching him up? But I really don't know. And then offensive-wise, like, I don't really know.
Yeah, I think we got to wait for the next big scandal.
I had almost
get that coach.
You know, I had almost talked myself into it being Cliff Kingsbury.
See,
when Nick Saban is in L.A. the day that he gets fired, you know, and he's obviously in Arizona, I'm like, he's just going to stop in Arizona, pick him up on the plane, bring him back. But no, Cliff Kingsbury's, you know, taking at least a year off in Thailand. You know, bought a one way ticket.
Okay, but you can't tell me that if Nick Saban's calling, that he's not picking up the phone.
I mean, he'll probably
I think
call.
After a couple weeks in Thailand, kind of a small country, maybe he's seen it all.
I know some people that went to Thailand. He's going to be living like a king over there with the money he's got.
Oh, I would, yeah. So anyway, back on the coordinator talk.
So how would we feel about Jeremy Pruitt if he was to get hired? Are we comfortable with that? It's a little bit of a controversial hire, but there's plenty of controversial hires going on in college football. Ask Auburn.
If you're talking about controversial hires, you can hire somebody who has the certain controversy as certain head coaches in the state, with covering up, you know, certain allegations from the football team and whatnot. But you know, Jeremy Pruitt, it's mostly. The only concerns you have is, oh, he was giving players money with, you know.
In a Chick-fil-A bag.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, whatever bag it was.
Facts straight, McDonald's.
But now, that's just an NIL collective.
Yeah.
that's almost
that's
legal.
That's on billboards, you know? Driving to the stadium.
Obviously, he's not going to – you're not going to hire him and be like, you know, hey, you know, give him some money. But, you know, now he could literally be like, hey – we got some good defensive guys. Can the boosters please give us some money? You know?
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with it. If Jeremy Pruitt comes back, I still love the hire. I like him as a defensive coordinator. I think it would be a good fit.
I don't mind much about the controversy because, I mean, if you look at the past guys that Alabama's hired, I mean, Steve Sarkisian had so many personal problems that Alabama hired him when he was pretty much at the lowest point. He kind of built him back up. Now he's head coach at Texas doing, you know, Texas stuff. Okay. You know, even guys like Mike Locksley, who was quarterback's coach, and he didn't have the controversy, but he was a terrible head coach at, I think, New Mexico or New Mexico State, you know, winning like one or two games a season. Alabama took him in. Yeah. Now he's at Maryland winning a couple more games.
Then, you know, hardly anybody would touch Lane Kiffin before we hired him as the coach. But one name he had, I believe he just got fired yesterday, it might have been the day before, but Byron Leftwich, you know, he was offense coordinator at Tampa Bay, and you know, I don't think he would come to college to coach. I think he wants to solely be in the NFL. But I saw some people, you know, some people said, you know, how would you feel about him as the offense coordinator, and other people were like, no, did you see how bad that Tampa Bay offense was? I'm like, yeah, but I also saw how good it was the last 2 years when he was offense coordinator. But apparently, when it's Tom Brady and they do good, it's all Tom Brady. But when they do bad, it's Byron Leftwich, and they need to fire him.
Yeah, I mean, that's about how it always goes, right?
Yeah.
I could also see, I mean, there is a couple other NFL guys who have been fired. I mean, Greg Roman, the Ravens offensive coordinator, as a Ravens fan, would not want him anywhere near this Alabama program. But, you know, he can run the ball. Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a couple guys. And to be honest, I wouldn't expect to hear much until at least after the NFL season, when you really get a staple as to who's available, who might consider it, who, you know, who won't consider it. So
you know, I'm sure Nick Saban already knows who he's, you know, who his number ones are. But then, like, I wouldn't be surprised if everybody, like, if they already know, like, oh, he's already taken the job, we're just waiting for his season to be over.
Yeah, know? That could be true too. Yeah.
I can confirm it was a Chick-fil-A bag. Okay. Several hundred dollars in a Chick-fil-A
bag.
I'm
an awful journalist.
That would make imagine the NIL
potential.
Well, at
least he couldn't pay, you know, players on Sundays, you know.
Imagine the NIL potential of, like, the picture of a player, a newly recruited player,
Chick-fil-A
holding
bag.
The Chick-fil-A bag right after that hire. I mean, it would break the internet. And I mean, sure, the NCAA wouldn't be happy, but, like,
I mean, if I was Jeremy Pruitt, I would come to my introduction press conference with a Chick-fil-A bag.
The potential is
Chick-fil-A
crazy.
Bag and a Coca-Cola
immediately
would be like, I'm ready. I'm ready.
So we're going to take another break here, folks. When we come back, I think we're going to talk some winners and losers of the season as a whole. So we'll see you.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Come back to 90.7 Capstone's college football wrap-up. We're finishing things up last 8 minutes or so. We're going to bring back probably our favorite segment from this past year, our biggest winners and losers, but this time it's going to be for the entirety of the season. So do we want to start with winners or losers? What do we think?
I think winners, because losers is more fun.
I mean, if you want to end on the bad note, yeah. We can do winners first.
Yeah, we can find a good note to end on. Yeah. So let's go. Who's your biggest winner of this season?
I'll start. My biggest winner this season, LSU. I mean, when you looked at the program coming into this year, obviously they fired Ed Orgeron last season, had kind of a disastrous bowl game to end the year where they were having just wild people play positions. They finished 6-7. Interestingly enough, also beat Kansas State. But, you know, just where they were from that 2019 national championship team, it looked like a non-existent thing. They brought in Brian Kelly, and then they improved to, you know, 10-4. They win the SEC West. They win, you know, their bowl game, the Cheez-It. Sorry, it was the Citrus Bowl, but brought to you by Cheez-Its.
The Cheez-It Bowls were so sinister.
Cheez-It. You know, there's no such thing as Cheez-Its.
Sorry.
Oh, right. Sorry.
The Cheez-It
Cheez-It Crackers.
But, you know, they win the West, they beat Alabama, and probably one of the more memorable games of college football going for two there. You know, get to the SEC championship game, then kind of get blown out, but still a very positive season. I think Brian Kelly has favored himself with the Louisiana crowd after his family discussion, or, you know, his wild accent went wrong. So I'll go LSU.
Yeah, so first I will give a shout out to a close second, I think, for everybody here with Tulane. Mm-hmm. Tulane had a very good, you know, season. They made it to the Cotton Bowl, I believe it was, against USC, and they beat USC in that game. Great season for them. But my winner is actually going to be, and it pains me to say this, Tennessee. Last year, 2021, they go 7-6. This year, 11-2, they beat Alabama for the first time in 16 years. You know, if they don't lose to South Carolina, they're probably in the playoff. And if Hendon Hooker doesn't get hurt in that game, he's probably a Heisman finalist. So I just think, you know, a team that not really people counted going into the season as a team that could challenge for the SEC, coming off a 7-6, you know, year the year before. Josh Heupel, second year as the head coach, and they go 11-2 and beat Clemson in the Orange Bowl. I got them as my biggest winner this year.
So my biggest winner this year is going to be the Pac-12 as a whole, and I think it's hard to argue against them being the biggest winner. A plethora of ranked teams. USC finishes 12th, Utah finishes 10th, Washington finishes 8th, Oregon 15th, Oregon State 17th, UCLA 21st. And then, you know, the worst team in your conference, Colorado, just picked up Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
And they just stole the number one cornerback this year in the class.
See, for that whole thing with Deion going to Colorado, Colorado was going to be my biggest loser. But since they picked up Deion and the huge transfer class, and, you know, they even got one of our assistant coaches to go over there and be the defense coordinator, you know, that's why I couldn't put them as my biggest loser in the next segment. But that is crazy.
But
I think
you
could have everybody in the Pac-12 good next year.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Pac-12 is going to be must-watch football next year. like, people who are coming back, Caleb Williams coming back, Cam Rising's going back to Utah, Cam Ward, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix is coming back.
Heisman year. Hooking up with Trayshawn Holden over at Oregon.
That's going to be fun. I can't wait for that. DJ transferring to Oregon State. Yeah. Obviously, Shedeur
A team that
Sanders.
Nobody realizes that they almost had a 10-win season this year.
Shedeur Sanders, you know, following his father to Colorado. Drew Pine going to Arizona State. I mean, like,
it's gonna be okay, yeah.
Drew Dante Pine. Moore coming to UCLA and coming five. Star, I mean, Pac-12 football is going to be really.
And
good
you know
next
what,
year.
UCLA will still have like 2,000 people.
but this might be the most entertaining Pac-12 football like since the mid 2000s USC.
Yeah,
like not saying that any of those teams are going to be that good, but just like top to bottom every week, like just the talent that's going to be on the field, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, they would be one of the conferences that would get a guaranteed spot in the playoff for your winner, correct?
Team. Once we get the 12 team. Still got one more year of the 4 team, but once they get the 12 team in 2 years, like a lot of those people, I mean, some of the big names we just said might be gone, but, you know, if they do as well as we think they're going to do, that's going to be a big boost to recruiting.
Yeah, Pac-12's moving up. So now we'll go to the Biggest Losers.
Yeah, I'll start off. Mine's the Miami Hurricanes, and I'll start off why they're my biggest loser with a little flashback. In the preseason AP Top 25 poll comes out. Miami is ranked 16th. Now, I don't put much into the preseason poll because Miami was ranked 14th the season prior and fell apart, but they were ranked 16th in the preseason poll and finished 5-7, including losses to Texas A&M, which is now a bad loss, Middle Tennessee State, Duke. They get trounced by Florida State, trounced by Clemson, and trounced by Pitt, all within a, like, four-week period. They finished their season on a 1-3 record. They barely even beat, like, they took Virginia to four overtimes, which, or I guess Virginia took them to four overtimes. They had some people were thinking that Tyler Van Dyke, their quarterback, might have been a sneaky Heisman guy. He kind of battled injuries throughout the season, so not, you know, too much to blame there. But he was 10 touchdowns, 5 picks for the season. Didn't look all that good. Was getting hit a lot. And, you know, when they hired Mario Cristobal, everything was supposed to change. He's from Miami. He's a Miami guy. And it's just kind of same old Miami. Right now, so they're my biggest loser.
Yeah, so we're kind of on the same page right here, because I got my biggest loser as Texas A&M. When you have the number one recruiting class, you have the best recruiting class, you know, of all time, you know, with the grading system, preseason number 6, and then you go 5-7 with, well, if you want to go through those losses again, I mean, yeah, they beat Miami, lost 17-14 Appalachian State, lost to Mississippi State, obviously Alabama. They almost beat Alabama, which that kind of shows like how of a season Alabama had this year. Lost to South Carolina, lost to Ole Miss, lost to Florida, lost to Auburn. They did beat UMass and then LSU to close out the season, so it wasn't like a total disaster. But when you're preseason number 6 and you had the number one recruiting class and then you finish unranked and then a lot of those recruits you had are now looking for other places to play football, I mean, good for Jimbo. You know, he's getting his money, and Texas A&M can't afford to get rid of him right now, but that's my biggest loser of the year.
You know, it kind of sucks that I have to finish it up this way. Look, for me, Alabama's the biggest loser of this last season. You come into the year with Bryce Young, the reigning Heisman. You've got just a fantastic defense. I mean, you have all the weapons. Everyone expects, like, here it is. Like, this team should be Georgia, right? Like, you should make the national champion, you should win a national championship with this team. And then you come out and you lose 2 games and you don't even make the playoff. That's, I mean, unheard of for Alabama. I mean, you almost lose to Texas. You still beat them, right? You almost lose to Texas A&M for the second year in a row. You know, get outscored 52-49 against Tennessee. That's painful. You lose to LSU. Like, LSU was the bigger loss, in my opinion, because, I mean, obviously if they – I think it was what? They had to beat LSU, and then they needed LSU to win – to lose one of the last two for them to make the SEC championship game or something along those lines.
Well, like, if we had just beat LSU, all we would have had to do was win out. Once we lost LSU – we had to win out, and then LSU needed to lose out, and they almost lost to Arkansas, and Texas A&M obviously beat them in the last game. And if KJ Jefferson plays for Arkansas, Arkansas might beat them in that game, and then we could have been in an SEC championship, and we might not be saying biggest loser of the year, but didn't happen that way.
It's just tough for me, and you had a good bounce back, you know, in the bowl game, you know, 45-21.
It was probably the best game Alabama
played. They looked great. You know, Bryce Young, Will Anderson both play in that game, which I think was genuinely a surprise.
I'm so glad I made the decision to buy a ticket to that game.
But I'm glad that they did. You know, they finished the year great, but unfortunately they're my biggest loser because expectations were sky high and you fell flat.
Yep.
So it's kind of a shame that I had to finish off like
Well, you know what? I'll end it on a good note. Texas A&M went 5-7.
Very true.
That's always a good note. And Auburn also, 5-7.
Auburn's rough.
Oh, and if I know it was a football show, but if anybody's paying attention, Alabama could very well be ranked number one in basketball.
Yeah, Houston did lose.
Did we have to trade missing the playoffs for a basketball national championship?
Dude, I have this theory.
No.
We do not have time to discuss this.
Man,
I have this theory that no school can be good at both. Like, you cannot be the best basketball and football school. And this season, Alabama's proving it because they're probably the best basketball school right now, and their football team had a bad season.
I will.
And next year, they might win the national championship of football. Basketball team, who knows?
Look, I will say, to back up your point a little bit, there has only been one team to win a football national championship and a basketball national championship.
Florida.
In the same. Well, it might be 2 years now. Yeah, it's happened twice, but one of them was Florida in the mid-2000s, and the last one before that was like in the 30s. So it kind of backs up your point, but for anybody saying that we should get rid of Nate Oates so that our football team can be good again, I saw a couple people on Twitter say that.
I say we break the streak.
we'll work on it.
Oh, there are no fogs here. No football only, guys. But that's going to do it for this week. We'll be back same time next week here on 90.7 Capstone. Thanks for joining us.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.